The headlines. Lebanon's Hezbollah movement joins Palestinian resistance groups in hailing the shooting operation in Tel Aviv as a legitimate response to Israeli crimes. China says the U.S. is to blame for, quote, the crisis over Iran's nuclear program and must swiftly make the political decisions to revive the 2015 deal. And the Attorney General of the U.S. state of New York asks a judge to hold former President Donald Trump in contempt for violating a court order. Hello and welcome everybody here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. Our top story for this half hour, at least two people are killed and nine more wounded in a Palestinian shooting operation in the Israeli capital, Tel Aviv. This is the fourth such attack in the last 2 weeks. Some of the victims are in critical condition. The shootings took place at several locations. Israeli forces later killed the Palestinian shooter in the city of Jaffa. Palestinian resistance groups have hailed the operation, with Hamas saying that it showed the ability of Palestinians to carry attacks in the heart of the occupied territories. A statement by Popular Resistance Committee says the attack was a legitimate response to intensified Israeli crimes. Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah has also hailed the operation. It says Palestinians once again demonstrated their ability to confront the occupying regime and respond to its crimes. 44 days into Russia's military operation in Ukraine, let's take a look at the latest developments there. Kiev says over 30 people have been killed and more than 100 others wounded in a Russian rocket strike on Kramatorsk railway station in eastern Ukraine. According to Ukrainian officials, the railway is being used for civilian evacuations from the Donbass region. Meanwhile, mayor of the port city of Mariupol says at least 160,000 civilians remain stranded there. The mayor also says the civilian death toll stands at about 5,000 elsewhere in the country. Russian forces have reportedly blockaded the northeastern city of Kharkiv. The United States has approved another $100 million in military aid for Ukraine. The U.S. has committed over 12,000 anti-armor systems, 1,400 anti-aircraft systems, and hundreds of kamikaze drones to Kiev. The move brings the total U.S. assistance to Ukraine to nearly $1.7 billion since the onset of Russia's operation in the country. That's while the U.S. and its NATO allies have claimed they are seeking to end the Ukraine crisis through diplomacy and dialogue. Japan has joined the chorus of countries banning Russian diplomats over the military operation in Ukraine. The Japanese Foreign Ministry has expelled eight Russian diplomats over, quote, war crimes, including the alleged killing of Ukrainian civilians by Russian troops. Russia's ambassador to Tokyo remains in the Japanese capital, while several trade officials will have to leave. Prime Minister Fumio Kishida has also announced Japan's decision to impose new sanctions on Moscow, including a ban on Russian coal imports. This in the wake of growing anti-Russia sanctions by Tokyo's Western allies over the purported massacre of civilians by Russian soldiers around Kiev, particularly in the city of Bucha. Russia has denied the allegation and warned it will reciprocate the expulsion of its diplomats. And China says the U.S. is to blame for the, quote, crisis over Iran's nuclear program and must therefore promptly make the political decisions to revive the 2015 deal known as the JCPOA. Foreign Ministry spokesman Zhao Lijian said Washington must actively respond to Iran's legitimate concerns. He said there's no better alternative to the JCPOA, and talks on its restoration have entered the final stage. Zhao said all parties have reached consensus on most of the final text, with a few items yet to be resolved. The JCPOA removed sanctions on Iran in exchange for limits on its nuclear program, but it was left in tatters after Washington unilaterally left in 2018. Iran and the other remaining parties in the deal, including China, have over the past year been holding talks in Vienna to restore the agreement, with the U.S. indirectly involved. The negotiations have stalled in the recent past. Yemen's Ansar movement slams talks hosted by Saudi Arabia on the Yemeni conflict, saying the future of the country will be determined by Yemenis themselves. A spokesman for the movement says the Yemeni nation does not care about the talks sponsored by illegal parties, Mohammad Abdel Salam says the only option for the Saudi-led coalition to promote peace is to stop attacks, lift its siege, and move out its forces. Other than that, he says, efforts to settle the conflict are nothing but desperate attempts to regroup mercenaries and use them to escalate tensions. The remarks follow an announcement by former Yemeni President Abdrabbo Mansour Hadi at the end of the Yemen talks in Riyadh, which saw his authority and powers being transferred to a new presidential council. Back in 2015, Hadi resigned and fled to Saudi Arabia. Afterwards, the kingdom launched a military campaign to bring him back to power, but to no avail. Political commentator Nasser Arabi says the talks hosted by Saudi Arabia will fail to result in any breakthrough in the Yemen conflict.
In fact, what happened in the Saudi capital is something that cares or that concerns those who are there, those who made the war and the aggression on Yemen. What matters most for the government in Sana'a is to end the war and also to lift the blockade, to end the suffering of the Yemeni people who have been suffering for about 7 years now. So the things that happened in Riyadh and the talks may concern the Saudis, the Emiratis, and their mercenaries, yes, but they do not matter those people who are or who have been have been under this blockade and sufferings for 7 years. As I said, there is no point at all, and there is no hope for these talks to achieve anything as long as they take place there in Saudi Arabia, because Saudi Arabia is an enemy. Saudi Arabia is behind all these things, all the suffering, all the bombings, and all the killings for 7 years.
Turkey was long spearheading efforts to bring those involved in the brutal assassination of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi to justice. Turkey has taken a U-turn on the case, surprising many who were hoping for some kind of punishment for the culprits.
The world will never forget the gruesome killing of outspoken journalist Jamal Khashoggi by a Saudi hit squad in 2018. Khashoggi was strangled at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul and then dismembered by a forensic scientist who worked for Saudi intelligence. The killing was caught on listening devices planted by Turkish intelligence. The Saudi dissident's body was then cut to pieces and taken to the Turkish consul general's residence, where it is believed to have been burned. No remains have ever been found. The brutal murder severely strained ties between Ankara and Riyadh and led to an unofficial Saudi boycott of Turkish exports. It cut Ankara's exports to Riyadh by 90%. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan was particularly vociferous in his condemnation of the Saudi government. He said Khashoggi was killed in cold blood by a death squad sent from Riyadh, and that it had been established that his murder was premeditated. The Turkish president said the operation had been ordered at the highest levels of the Saudi government. His assessment was supported by a U.S. intelligence report which said Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman had personally approved the assassination. There has been almost no doubt that the order to kill came from very high up in the Saudi government. And Turkey was widely seen as the most unrelenting force behind efforts to bring those responsible for the assassination to justice. But Ankara has suddenly changed course. On Thursday, a Turkish court halted the trial of Saudi suspects and transferred the case to Saudi Arabia.
The Turkish court's decision to halt legal proceedings against Saudi suspects has drawn strong condemnation from rights groups. Critics of the decision argue that the move would effectively end the case. Let's see what is believed to be behind Turkey's sudden U-turn on the murder case.
The Turkish court's ruling has been widely denounced. Rights groups called the move an appalling whitewash. Khashoggi's Turkish fiancé says she has been surprised and saddened by the decision, which she described as political. Following the court's ruling, Hatice Cengiz said Saudi Arabia is a country where there is no justice and that no one expects a just decision there. She also pledged to appeal the court ruling. The Turkish U-turn on the murder trial comes as President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is trying to mend ties with the Saudis. The Khashoggi case has been a major obstacle to warmer political relations between the two sides. But why does Turkey need to reset its ties with the oil-rich kingdom so much? Turkey is grappling with a severe economic downturn, and the Turkish leader is facing an election next year.
I think it has everything to do with trying to mend ties with Saudi Arabia. I think Turkey has been chasing reconciliation with its former antagonist. We've seen that it's reconciled with the UAE. We've seen that it's been making concessions to Egypt, that it's been restricting the activity of Egyptian opposition in Istanbul and telling Egyptian opposition critics in Istanbul to tone down their criticism of Sisi in a bid to try to get Egypt to accept a reconciliation. And likewise, we're seeing Turkey make strenuous efforts in order to convince Mohammed bin Salman to end the Saudi boycott of Turkish goods.
Riyadh had made it clear to Ankara that a thaw could only come if Ankara drops the case against the kingdom. The Turkish court's ruling has left little doubt that cash-strapped Ankara wants a thaw in ties with the wealthy Saudis to such an extent that it is willing to drop the high-profile case for good.
So what Turkey is essentially doing, it's handing the issue over to Saudi Arabia and saying, for us, the matter is closed and we're going to allow you to close the matter as well permanently so that nobody officially in the international community can talk about Khashoggi anymore.
Saudi petrodollars seem to be once again giving the kingdom impunity for its horrific crimes.
Elsewhere, the Attorney General of the U.S. State of New York asked a judge to hold former President Donald Trump in contempt for violating a court order. Attorney General Letitia James argues that Trump has failed to turn over documents related to the probe into possible fraud in Trump's business dealings. She has also asked the judge to fine Trump $10,000 a day until he turns over the materials. Trump and two of his children were ordered in February to submit to questioning under oath. But the order is still under appeal. Trump was also ordered to present a series of accounting and tax documents relevant to his organization. The attorney who has been pursuing the probe since 2019 says Donald Trump has been trying to evade the court order. And now to Peru, where the government has declared a state of emergency on all its highways in a bid to clear roadblocks set up by truckers protesting against price hikes. The measure allows for the army to be deployed clearing the blockades while also suspending certain constitutional rights such as freedom of movement. Anger prevails across the South American nation over rising fuel and fertilizer prices. President Pedro Castillo has taken various measures to end the protests, including cutting taxes on fuel and raising the minimum wage. This week, he also declared a curfew in Lima to try to stifle dissent, but thousands defied the order and took to the streets in protests that later turned violent. The situation has put Castillo's political future in danger. His approval ratings have dipped to a record low of 19%. He recently survived a second impeachment in less than a year in power. Secret letters from Prince Charles's to notorious pedophile Jimmy Savile have resurfaced. The heir to the British throne had sought the advice of the now disgraced ex-DJ to use his expertise to help the royal family handle its speech writing, charity, and PR issues. The correspondence spanning two decades has been seen as yet another issue that will stoke anti-monarchy sentiment for the royals already struggling with declining support. Amina Taylor has more.
One of these men is Britain's monarch in waiting. The other is one of the UK's most prolific paedophiles and abusers, a public figure who used his influence to groom and attack on suspecting victims. Big question I get asked. Now in a series of bombshell revelations being made in a new Netflix series, the handwritten correspondence between 1986 to 2006 shows Prince Charles asking the late Savile for tips in repairing the reputation of the royal. Experts argue that the prince was duped like so many others, but even without the benefit of hindsight, Charles's association with Savile seems surprising.
It's remarkable that they didn't call upon the services of a professional PR company and they sought the services of Jimmy Savile. It just goes to show the lack of judgment and the lack of understanding of the potential for this kind of blowback when they cavort with these celebrities not knowing anything about their background or not even trying to look into their background before they do so. We are talking about the royal family after all, aren't we?
These new revelations, albeit of a past association, adds to the woes of an institution already struggling with the fallout from the Meghan Markle-Prince Harry union, Prince Andrew reaching a multi-million pound settlement for allegations he had sex with an underage girl, and outstanding accusations that Prince Charles's former associate exchanged financial inducements for helping a Saudi millionaire with his British papers.
This new revelation is something the royal family could well do without at a time when the House of Windsor is scrambling to repair its image and reputation after a series of very public missteps. The association between one of the most prolific abusers in history and the heir to the throne is a serious blow.
As Queen Elizabeth scales back on her public duties, Prince Charles must now try and convince an uncertain public the crown will be safe in his hands. On this evidence, at least, the jury is out. Amina Taylor, London.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of the World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
نقيم الدين ولا تتفرقوا فيه.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran.
كتاب الله.
وَلَقَدْ يَسَّرْنَا الْقُرْآنَ لِلذِّكْرِ فَهَلْ مِن مُدَّكِرٍ
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam and welcome to another episode of our weekly series titled Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. For the past few weeks, we have been explaining Surah Qamar, which was revealed in Mecca and deals mainly with the punishment of disbelievers of the past generations as a warning to the pagans of Mecca and also to the disbelievers of all times with the refrain, Is there anyone who will be admonished? Running throughout the surah. The miserable fate of the disbelievers on the Day of Judgment is contrasted to the everlasting bliss the believers will enjoy in Paradise. An interesting feature of this surah is that all 55 of its ayahs end with the letter R. We continue from where we left you last week, and here are ayahs 41 and 42.
وَلَقَدْ جَاءَ آلَ فِرْعَوْنَ النُّذُرُ كَذَّبُوا بِآيَاتِنَا كُلِّهَا فَأَخَذْنَاهُمْ أَخْذَ عَزِيزٍ مُقْتَدِرٍ
Certainly the warnings came to Pharaoh's clan, who denied all our signs. So we seized them with the seizing of one who is almighty, omnipotent. If you remember, in our explanation of the previous ayahs of Surah Qamar last Friday, we dwelt on the terrible fate of the homosexual people of Sodom, Gomorrah, and other cities, for whose guidance God Almighty had sent Prophet Lot. But except for a few, the majority indulged in the unnaturally abominable habit of sodomy. Or gay, to use the modern Western term. We said a nation of disbelievers that is immersed in cardinal sins will eventually be struck by divine wrath after God has given ample respite for repentance and sealed his argumentation, since none can stand against the will of the Almighty Creator, which prevails over all and everything. We also said, the Noble Quran is not a book of history, but it gives an accurate narration of selective events of the past in order to wake up human conscience to help discover the truth. The ayahs that we recited to you now refer to the destruction brought upon himself and his arrogant followers by Egypt's tyrannical pharaoh who claimed to be God and had enslaved the monotheist Israelites, despite the admonishments of Prophet Moses, peace upon him, to release them by showing astounding miracles. Ayah 42 pertains to the denial of manifest truth by Pharaoh and his arrogant clan, who considered divine signs as lies, magic, or coincidence. God Almighty is saying that He sees them by His might so that it may be known to all that the groundless claims of might and grandeur by tyrants are nothing against divine omnipotence and glory. Even a small beings like low-caste frogs and a kind of insect called Gumal vanquished the sinful Egyptians, rendering them helpless and led to their destruction through drowning. These ayahs teach us that, number one, obedience to unjust rulers and tyrants means complicity in their crimes. Number two, miracles are meant to awaken people and seal the argumentation so that sinners may not have any excuse in the face of divine wrath. And number three, power, might, and glory belong to the all-merciful Creator before whom nothing can stand. Now let us listen to ayahs 43, 44, 45, and 46 of the same surah.
أَكُفَّارُكُمْ خَيْرٌ مِّنْ أُولَائِكُمْ أَمْ لَكُمْ بَرَاءَةٌ فِي الزُّبُرُ أَمْ يَقُولُونَ نَحْنُ جَمِيعٌ مُّنْتَصِرٌ سيهزم الجمع ويولون الدبر بل الساعة موعدهم والساعة أدهى وأمر.
Are you faithless better than those, or do you have some immunity in the scriptures? Do they say, we are a confederate league? The league will soon be rooted and turn its back to flee. Rather, the hour is their tryst, and the hour will be most calamitous and bitter. After recounting the terrible fate of some of the powerful nations of the past for their sins, these ayahs address the polytheist Arabs of Mecca and mean to ask them, are you disbelievers better than those of the past? Or your disobedience, animosity, and disbelief are less than theirs? Is there any difference between you and the peoples of Pharaoh, Thamud, Ad, and Sodom? Is there immunity for you against divine wrath in the heavenly revealed scriptures? Ayahs 44 and 45 refute the claim of the pagan Arabs that they were a great league of confederates who wreak vengeance upon enemies and vanquish them, by predicting that soon you will be defeated and flee from battlefields, as was the case in battles like Badr, when the seemingly mighty hordes of pagan Arabs were put to flight by a few hundred lightly armed Muslims. Ayah 46 means to say that more terrible than the defeat on the battlefields shall be the fate of the disbelievers on the day of resurrection, when more horrible and bitter punishments await them. These ayahs teach us the following points. Number one, arrogance, vanity, and egotism lead to a person's destruction. Number two, whatever we possess, including wealth and power, is given by God, in whose infinite might we should trust, rather than being self-conceited. And number three, it is a divine promise to annihilate oppression and injustice. Now let us listen to ayahs 47, 48, 49, and 50 of Surah Qamar.
إِنَّ الْمُجْرِمِينَ فِي ضَلَالٍ وَسُعُرٍ يَوْمَ يُسْحَبُونَ فِي النَّارِ عَلَى وُجُوهِهِمْ ذُوقُوا مَسَّ سَقَرٍ إِنَّا كُلَّ شَيْءٍ خَلَقْنَاهُ بِقَدَرٍ وَمَا أَمْرُنَا إِلَّا وَاحِدَةٌ كَلَمْحٍ بِالْبَصَرِ.
Indeed, the guilty are in error and madness. The day when they are dragged into the fire on their faces, it will be said to them, "Taste the touch of hell." Indeed, we have created everything in a measure. And our command is but a single word, like the twinkling of an eye. These ayahs depict the fate of the disbelievers and intransigent sinners who turn away from the path of virtue by choosing the path of vices and thus bring about their own destruction. On the day of judgment, such people will be dragged into the eternal inferno, and it shall be said unto them, "Taste the heat and hardship of hell, which you denied and belittled." Ayah 49 means to say that the torment inflicted upon the sinners is consistent with their evil deeds and not greater. Since God Almighty has created everything in its due measure. In other words, divine acts are well measured, wise, and fast. And as Ayah 50 says, God's commandment is but one, and it is done as fast as the twinkling of an eye. Whatever the Almighty Creator wills, He merely says, "Be," and it will come into being. From these ayahs, we learn that, number one, we ought to be always conscious of and in constant awe of our beloved Creator, whose commandments should be obeyed and to whom we should be thankful for His infinite blessings. Number two, the fate of those who die in the state of disbelief and sins is terrible. And number three, God has created everything in proper measure on the basis of justice, hence reward and punishment are meted out with exact measure. In conclusion of this week's episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, we present you ayahs 51, 52, 53, 54, and 55, which also mark the end of Surah Qamar.
وَلَقَدْ أَهْلَكْنَا أَشْيَاعَكُمْ فَهَلْ مِن مُدَّكِرٍ وَكُلُّ شَيْءٍ فَعَلُوهُ فِي الزُّبُرِ وكل صغير وكبير مستطر إن المتقين في جنات ونهر في مقعد صدق عند مليك مقتدر.
And certainly we have destroyed your likes, so is there anyone who will be admonished? And everything they have done is in the box. And everything big and small is committed to writing. Indeed, the God-weary will be amid gardens and streams, in the abode of truthfulness with an omnipotent king. Ayah 51 refers to the divine principle of the destruction of the evil nations, so as to serve as a warning to the coming generations, who ought to take admonishments in order to abstain from sins by following the path of virtue. The next two ayahs are a reference to the fundamental principle that the deeds committed by the past generations were not effaced following their death, but whatever was done by them, whether big or small, has been preserved in the records of their deeds. Likewise, the deeds of all people, including the present and the future generations, will be recorded and preserved for the day of reckoning. Everything is registered, and on the day of judgment, the system of reward and punishment will put into effect with full exactness. Ayahs 54 and 55, which mark conclusion of Surah Qamar, refer to the lofty position of the righteous in the eternal bliss of paradise. Firstly, mention is made of the material bounties like vast gardens and rivers in paradise. And secondly, mention is made of their greatest spiritual reward, namely presence at the threshold of proximity to the omnipotent Lord. From these ayahs we learn that, number one, the divine system of reward and punishment is absolutely just, and all people will be judged with fairness. Number two, although God knows everything and He is the judge on the day of judgment, our small and big deeds are registered exactly by angels and presented to us on the day of resurrection so that none can deny anything. And number three, the rewards of the inhabitants of paradise are not limited to physical and material pleasures, and they will enjoy such spiritual bounties as proximity to the prophets. As a matter of fact, spiritual pleasures are not describable or understandable for mankind. On this note, we come to the end of the explanation of Surah Qamar, and next Friday, God willing, we will start Surah Ar-Rahman. Goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Though the impact is already being felt, heat waves are largely silent killers. Often, the toll is tallied far into the aftermath of an event and is vastly undercounted. Unlike wildfires and floods that produce immediate and visible destruction, heat waves' harmful effects can seem more subtle, even if they're in fact more deadly. Here we present you an article written by Gabrielle Cannon. The piece is titled California Debates Naming Heat Waves to Underscore Deadly Risk of Extreme Heat. Climate scientists from around the world issued dire warnings recently in the latest IPCC report on the dangers posed in the unfolding climate crisis. Among them is extreme heat, a crisis that on average already claims more American lives than hurricanes and tornadoes combined. Though the impact is already being felt, heat waves are largely silent killers. Often the toll is tallied far into the aftermath of an event and is vastly undercounted. Unlike wildfires and floods that produce immediate and visible destruction, heat waves' harmful effects can seem more subtle, even if they're in fact more deadly. Chrissy Ebbey, a professor in the Center for Health and the Global Environment at the University of Washington, says, "People don't think of heat as a hazard, but in the Pacific Northwest, where Ebbey lives, for example, unprecedented temperatures baked the region last year, bewildering residents used to moderate, often lukewarm summers." Policymakers and environmentalists are looking for better ways to close the gap in the public's perception of the risks of heat waves, especially in the American West, where landscapes are rapidly warming. Some are pushing for new ranking systems to help elevate awareness around the issue or assign heat waves names, much like federal agencies do for hurricanes. Kathy Bogman-McLeod, the Senior Vice President and Director of the Adrienne Ash Rockefeller Foundation Resilience Center, said, "We need a shock to the system. The organization, which focuses on policy solutions to the climate crisis, has advocated heatwave naming along with number categories as a way to add urgency to the growing disasters." She says, "If you go into the hospital now and are suffering from heat, they will say you have kidney failure or heart failure." She added, "There are so many areas now we need to culturally shift that context of heat." The group advised California on new legislation introduced last year, which would make it the first state to implement a naming and ranking system, like the organizational system for categorizing storms dating back in the 1800s. Athens, Greece, and Seville, Spain will roll out similar programs later on this year. Advocates of the program believe assigning a name to a disaster will help people engage with it. Kathy Bogman-McLeod said, "It becomes an identity and a brand is built," adding that it also helps for archival purposes. McLeod noted, "We all remember what happened during Hurricane Sandy. I know what a Category 3 is, and I know when it has a name, it has reached a certain threshold, and I need to pay attention and act." Still, the science isn't clear on whether a name would do much to communicate heightened dangers in the most effective way. Kimberly McMahon, a National Weather Service Public Weather Services program manager, said, "The National Weather Service is not aware of any research or evidence that suggests naming heat waves would raise awareness about heat-related risks." But she said early warning systems, with or without associated names, play an important part, adding, "Even knowing the potential for a heat event or abnormally hot summer can allow preparations to occur further in advance." Naming aside, the two bills in California also outlined the creation of an interagency heat task force, an extreme heat advisory council, and will open a new chief heat officer role to oversee planning and preparation. The pieces of legislation, if they pass, would initiate statewide advance warning and ranking by the start of 2024 and would establish the Extreme Heat and Community Resilience Program to coordinate state efforts and coordinate with local and regional officials. Chrissy Ebbey, a professor in the Center for Health and the Global Environment at the University of Washington, says that coordination between agencies that include local, state, and federal programs will be key. Noting that a variety of stakeholders should be brought to the table, Chrissy Ebbey says, "There are lots of opportunities to facilitate the information transfer so that as people develop these systems, they don't start from the very beginning." She added, "On the one hand, the projections are dire, but on the other, we have an enormous basket of options for what can be done to protect people who are at higher risk during a heat wave. Several municipalities across Western United States and governments across the globe are already adopting heat programs and heat plans. At the federal level, the National Integrated Heat Health Information Systems and White House Extreme Heat Intra-Agency Working Group are collaborating to expand messaging about extreme heat and offering up lessons learned. Phoenix, which is at the top of the list of rapidly heating cities, hired scientist and the heat expert David Hondula to head its new Office of Heat Response and Mitigation in September of last year, becoming the first U.S. city to launch a publicly funded position of this kind. Miami, Florida also brought on a chief heat officer, as did Athens, Greece, and Freetown in Sierra Leone. There's still a difficult path ahead, but according to Kirsty Ebby, planning will go a long way. She said, all heat-related deaths are preventable. We have a real opportunity to improve lives today, even if the climate continues to change. Meanwhile, Southern California, home to 23 million people, has largely been spared the kind of extreme fire escalation experienced in the northern part of the state. But models drawn up by researchers at the University of California at Los Angeles have predicted that will change. Wildfires in Southern California are often driven by dry winds, low humidity, and high temperatures. And the climate crisis is creating the perfect conditions for them to burn hotter, faster, and more frequently. Analyzing data from 49 climate stations scattered across the southern coast, from Santa Barbara to San Diego, the University of California at Los Angeles study found that the region could see double the number of what scientists call large fire days by 2100 if greenhouse gas emissions are not curbed. Even in a more moderate scenario, where heating is slowed, the researchers' models showed a 60% increase in high-risk days compared with the late 20th century. Glenn MacDonald, a professor of geography at University of California at Los Angeles and the lead author of the study, said, "Things are going to get worse." The researchers analyzed a series of variables that can increase fire risk and found certain climatic characteristics, especially how dry the air is, usually determine when the biggest blazes erupt. MacDonald said, from what we found, that you could sort of predict when you were going to have your large fire probability in Southern California. After determining the patterns most associated with wildfires, researchers modeled how those patterns might change in the decades ahead. They found that not only will days get drier, but those days will start to show up earlier in the spring and stick around later into the autumn, thus extending the probability to a greater part of the year. They found these high-risk days would probably increase from the 36 days a year documented from the 1970s to the late 1990s to 71 days a year by 2070. These conditions won't just produce more wildfires, they will also affect fire behavior, making them more destructive and harder to contain. Southern California's landscapes, which are dominated by grassland and shrubland rather than large forests, burn and recover differently from their northern neighbors. Decades of poor land management and tamping down on indigenous practices of prescribed burnings has also left Northern California's forests overcrowded and primed for bad burns, an issue that's less prevalent in Southern California. MacDonald says that's partly why the region have had such different experiences with wildfires. It's not like climatologically we have been dodging the bullet, but we just haven't seen the same impact that we see in the more remote regions of Northern California and the Sierra Nevada in those forested systems. That doesn't mean the rest of the state will be spared. A separate study released last year, led by researchers at University of California at Irvine, looked at the temperatures in the Sierra Nevada range during 450 wildfires that ignited there between 2001 and 2020. The analysis shows that as warming gets worse and temperatures continue to spike, wildfires in Sierra Nevada could increase by 20% or more over the next 20 years. The amount of land burnt would increase even more sharply, rising by 25% by the 2040s. Fires are already exhibiting more extreme behavior, adding new challenges to containment efforts. One new phenomenon documented in a study published recently and led by McDonald's colleagues at the University of California at Los Angeles is blazes are more likely to burn throughout the night. The study found that globally, night fires have grown 7.2% in intensity over the last two decades, thanks to hot, dry conditions that persist after sunset, closing what was once an essential window to tame the flames of wildfire.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common. This is the part of a speech delivered on March 10th, 2022 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the chairman and members of the Assembly of Experts. The meeting was held at the end of the ninth session of the Assembly. National power and strength is vital for every nation. Another element is culture and lifestyle. This is another element of power. If a nation is a mere follower of others in terms of lifestyle, without the power to voice its own opinions, and if it is lacking in a well-established culture of its own, this is naturally a big weakness in national power. Another element is having an attractive logic capable of influencing other nations and of achieving a strategic depth for the country. When you have an attractive logic in the Islamic Republic, which is attractive to other nations and which has great potential to attract others, when you discuss it with them directly, this will be your strategic depth. All these things constitute the interrelated chain of national power. Of course, there are other elements that I will return to later on, the ones which are related to our discussion.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
You must note that none of these arms of power should be cut off in favor of the others. We do not have the right to cut off any of these arms of power with the belief that they might be in conflict with the other elements. No, all of them must move forward alongside one another, which is possible. It is really naive if someone suggests that we decrease our defensive power so as not to make the enemies sensitive. In my opinion, there is no statement which is more simple-minded than saying that we must decrease our defensive power and our foreign security muscle so that the enemies do not become sensitive. For instance, such opinions claim that we must not have any regional presence so that such and such a superpower will not be on bad terms with us and will not have an excuse. No, regional presence is our strategic depth. This, in itself, is a tool for the power and strength of the Islamic government. Why should we lose it when we can and must have such a thing? I could equally mention the suggestion to forego our scientific progress.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.